Mr. Memon?
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the Court. The VA and the Veterans Court ruled that Mr. Robinson was barred from receiving veterans benefits based on his discharge by a general court-martial for absent without leave offense, an offense for which he received a full presidential pardon. But a full pardon removes all consequences and disabilities for an offense, and being barred from receiving veterans benefits was a consequence and disability of Mr. Robinson's offense.
Well, it says actually, if you look on the document itself, signed by the Attorney General with the President Board's heading, that he receives a pardon pursuant to the grant of a conditional clemency. And then in the record provided to us, the veterans record, it says a meaning of a clemency discharge. This is A326. It's a document from the General Counsel of the White House. It says such a discharge in and of itself restores no veterans benefits. Finally, the clemency discharge, like a presidential pardon, is an expression that removes the stigma, but again, no benefits.
Yes, Your Honor.
This was all kind of very clear at the time, and indeed 8 times since then that it's been challenged, right?
Well, the VA has consistently held to the same position that he's barred from receiving benefits and has told him that many times since. To Your Honor's first point, though, about the wording of the pardon itself, it's made pursuant to Executive Branch conditional clemency, but then it goes on to say made subject to conditions which have been fulfilled. So the conditions that were actually set forward in the pardon document were conditions precedent, conditions that had been fulfilled when Mr. Robertson participated in this clemency program.
But does the language in furtherance of the proclamation impact the scope of the pardon?
Your Honor, we don't believe it does, and I think there's two relevant points there. One is an interpretation point. So interpreting pardons, there's a rule of interpretation set forth in Osborne versus the United States, cited in both parties' briefs, that ambiguities are construed in favor of the grantee of the pardon. And Blackstone's commentaries makes the same point, going back, you know, to a long English history about you construe the pardon in favor of the grantee. But that's an interpretation point. But as far as even if you look at this pardon is being done in furtherance of the proclamation, there's nothing inconsistent with reading this and understanding this as being a full pardon that would be inconsistent with the President's proclamation. The language that the government refers to in the proclamation was that the clemency discharge, the proclamation never mentioned pardons, that the clemency discharge shall not bestow entitlement to veterans benefits. And that language is important because if under certain discharges, such as honorable discharges, the VA can't second guess that. They must view the veteran as being entitled to benefits.
But isn't that the whole point, that while the pardon pursuant to the clemency program restored rights, including the right to vote, it didn't change the nature of his discharge, did it?
Well,
he still has on his record other than honorable discharge.
Your Honor, it still is on his record that he received a bad conduct discharge. But I think the point is not that record needs to be changed. The point is that
they say to him many times, if you can change your discharge at the board for military correction of military records, you'll be back in, but of course that's not happened.
Well, and if I can, I'd like to explain why that point I think there's a misrepresentation, or not a misrepresentation, but a misexplanation, I guess, of that process. That the reason the board referred him to the ABCMR, the Board of Correction Military Records, is because that was the one place that could undo the statutory bar. So assuming, as the board did, if you look at 1974 decision that initially denied him benefits before his pardon, in 1977, the first time they denied his benefits after the pardon, they used the exact same language. You need to go see the ABCMR. The reason why they said that in 1974 is because only the ABCMR, absent a pardon, only they could change the fact that he had been discharged by a general court-martial. The important thing is not that Mr. Robertson doesn't have an honorable discharge. The important thing is that there's a statutory bar that prevents the VA from granting him benefits. And that's why they needed to send him, or they said he needed to go to the ABCMR to remove that statutory bar so that they could even consider him. Because the VA still has an obligation for anything other than a dishonorable discharge. The VA has an obligation to make a character of discharge determination for every veteran to say, is this veteran eligible for benefits?
And that's your point that the board could have, Board of Military Review, could have given him a character of discharge that would have mandated that he receive benefits. But even if they don't do that, it is still the VA's obligation to undertake an independent character of discharge.
Absolutely.
Not character of service, but character of discharge.
Absolutely, Your Honor. That's exactly right. That if the ABCMR had upgraded Mr. Robertson to honorable, the VA couldn't do anything else. They would be bound to honor that honorable discharge. But where Mr. Robertson's clemency discharge stands, the VA's own regulations, and the Veterans Court notes this, the VA has to make that character of discharge determination. So the error was that the VA says, we're not going past the fact that you have a statutory bar because of you were discharged by a general court-martial, ergo you can't be eligible for benefits. Statutory bar, in this case, as Amicus points out and we argue, is a penalty associated with his offense. So it's not that if Mr. Robertson, that he needed the honorable discharge to apply for benefits. It's that the VA failed to honor the fact that the pardon removes the consequences and disabilities, in this case, the statutory bar.
Well, that's only the case if we read full pardon in that text as in the way you want to. If we read it in the context of this very unique, specific program as being conditional pardons, which there's some argument for, then the fact that he got a pardon doesn't wipe out everything. So here's what I mean. I took a look at a lot of this stuff, and particularly at some of the program or the board reports and the Senate hearings, and it seems to me that it's very clear that the president didn't want to make these pardons an automatic grant of veterans benefits. And in some cases, if there was exceptional circumstances, the board recommended immediate honorable discharges. In other circumstances, the board granted the clemency discharge and said, this will free you up to try and get an upgrade from the board, but we're not giving you the upgrade that will get you benefits. And so how do we read your argument in the context of that? It seems like you want to override what was going on at the time.
Your Honor, I think, if I may, I would not agree that the president, what the clemency board materials or the proclamation actually gives an inference of what the president intended for this pardon to mean. Because remember, the pardon was never mentioned in the proclamation.
You want us to read this one specific pardon document outside the context of the program?
I think the pardon itself is an act of constitutional significance. The fact that the president says, I've issued to you a full pardon, that language has constitutional...
In furtherance of the clemency program.
In furtherance of the clemency program.
Let me just see if I can get where you are here. The fact that he used the word full pardon in this document automatically brings in that whole line of constitutional cases, and we can't look at the specific facts of this program.
We submit that the fact that he used full pardon and the only conditions were conditions that had been fulfilled means that he gets the full pardon without any other restrictions on that. And
even
it brings
if we
in those
look
cases.
At the program and the board and recognize that when the board actually wanted, in very special circumstances, particularly where people had been awarded medals of valor and things like that, they granted immediate upgrades to honorable discharges. So if they had intended the pardon here to grant him benefits, they could have done that, but they didn't. They pushed the decision to the Corrections Board.
But I think, Your Honor, it loops combines the clemency discharge issue with the pardon. So the immediately upgrading honorable discharges, as I mentioned, that has an effect of automatically entitling a veteran to benefits. We're not arguing here that Mr. Robinson's pardon entitles him to benefits. What our argument is that the VA can't use the pardon offense to bar him from receiving or applying for benefits. The VA still has to make its determination.
Then why didn't you appeal the refusal to upgrade, even if it's, you know, putting aside whether it's relevant to the VA's obligation? I mean, it seemed like that refusal to upgrade was directly at odds with the concept of the pardon. It's entirely based on the AWOL court-martial that was pardoned.
It may have been, Your Honor, but I think there's also the government could have argued in that case that its refusal to upgrade or change the fact that he had been discharged by a general court-martial is similar to the case was talking about expunging records, that because you have a pardon doesn't mean you automatically get to write away the fact of what occurred. So I think there's a difference between rewriting the records, rewriting the history, and saying you can no longer discriminate or impose a disability for a person. But Your Honor's first question about the why there was an appeal, Mr. Robinson has fought a lonely battle over a number of years applying for these benefits, and by the time the clinic got involved below, it basically was too late. It was too late for the ABCMR to go to them and to appeal that decision based on the time there. So I can't answer the question before 2006 when the last ABCMR decision, the ones that they denied in the early 80s.
But so are you aware of other people getting these clemency discharges and then pursuing the community service and other conditions to get a pardon? Did they get something less than a full pardon, or did everybody get what Mr. Robertson did?
Your Honor, the history here is unfortunately unclear as to whether the clemency discharges always
get a pardon. I don't know the answer to that either, but let me ask the hypothetical in case we can figure it out. If everybody got the same thing that Mr. Robertson got, then why would, in those rare cases, if your argument prevails, the board have been required to, or the board recommended automatic honorable discharges and distinguished a certain group? If everybody was going to get a full pardon, the effect of which, under your argument, would be to wipe out consideration of the misconduct, then the board didn't need to make those different classes, because anybody that went through the program, got the clemency discharge, and then the pardon, would be entitled to have the VA ignore those offenses. But the program didn't do that. It created different classes.
Well, Your Honor, I don't know that if there could be circumstances when the VA, again, we're not saying that the pardon entitles him to benefits, it removes the bar. So there might be circumstances in the VA in going back and doing a character of discharge determination has other bases to say that this veteran is still not entitled to benefits, absent consideration of the pardon offense. I don't know that we can look to saying that this would apply in all circumstances and be a blanket grant of
benefits. And in the legislative history, they discussed the fact that there might be some people who had these AWOL or other had that basis that was going to be pardoned, but also might have something else that supported the bad conduct discharge.
Right, there might be something else, and you
like
know, the government
fighting or a. Some other dishonorable activity.
Right. I don't know that how those facts would play out. So I don't know that that necessarily be coextensive in all cases. But I think that still, it's important that these are other boards, other commissions that have opined on their interpretation of, you know, what the pardon would do. But it's not a legal a binding interpretation of what the president intended by this pardon. I think that has to be governed by the plain language of the pardon itself. And that fact that the president said full pardon, only conditions are the conditions that have been fulfilled.
Right, and the clemency discharge is defined as being completely neutral, a neutral discharge as it relates to veterans' benefits, right?
The clemency discharge was intended to be neutral. The VA and its own regulations, they still had to make a character of discharge determination to determine eligibility.
But, I mean, the clemency board itself,
right,
issued a memorandum saying it's neutral vis-a-vis benefits.
Correct. And I mean, they didn't want to hurt people by giving the clemency discharge.
It didn't guarantee award, but it didn't prohibit award.
Yes. If I may reserve my time.
Thank you, Mr. Madden. We'll restore Mr. Mammon's time and give Mr. Goodman an additional 3 minutes if he needs it.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. What Mr. Robertson's arguing is that the President accidentally made him eligible for veterans benefits. It's clear from the face of the presidential document setting up this program that wasn't the President's intent.
Do you know what, when you say it's clear from the face of the program, all the program was intended to do is not guarantee benefits of the clemency discharge, right?
Right.
Okay, so the clemency discharge, by statute, there are certain discharges that guarantee you benefits, an honorable discharge. You're bound by that, right?
Yes.
And you're bound by a dishonorable discharge to not give benefits, right?
No. Other than honorable and general, what the VA has to do is do a character of discharge determination. So they have
other than dishonorable.
Yes, everything other than the general and the
right. Other than dishonorable, you do a character determination. Character of discharge, not character of behavior.
Right. Right. That's exactly right. It's the character of discharge, but they do that in all cases other than the automatic yeses. So whenever there's not an automatic right to benefit, they do a character of discharge determination.
Okay. So here you're saying that the pardon, which the entirety of his discharge was based only on that one court-martial, correct?
Yes, that was the basis for the discharge.
Nothing else, none of the other misconduct that you want us to look at, but that was the only thing it was based on, correct?
Yes.
And your character of discharge analysis is on the character of the discharge, not the character of all of his underlying service behavior.
That's correct.
Okay, so if a clemency discharge was meant to just put you in the bucket of all the other types of discharges where a character of discharge review was to occur, and you have a pardon as it relates to the only basis for discharge, then how can you say that you can look at that single basis for discharge?
First of all, he was already in that bucket where the VA was going to do a character of discharge determination. That's true before or after the clemency discharge. In any time when an application for veterans benefits comes in and he doesn't have a general or an honorable, the VA needs to look behind the curtain, if you will, do a character of discharge determination. And all that means is they look at 3.12 in their regulations and see whether one of the 10 statutory bars apply, or statutory and regulatory bars. There's 5 statutory, 5 regulatory. And it's just a check mark. Do any of these bars apply? If the answer to that is no, then none of those apply, then he's eligible for veterans benefits.
Right. But the statutory bar that you relied upon was the court-martial that had been pardoned.
He was, in fact, discharged under a court-martial. That's absolutely correct. And he says the VA can't look at that when doing the character of discharge determination. But if that's correct, then everybody in this program is in the same boat, because the only way somebody isn't eligible for veterans benefits is if one of those bars applies. And he's saying what a pardon does is comes in and it removes the bar.
Removes a bar, just one particular bar that this program removed, which was AWOL.
For him.
Anybody. If someone else, you know, I can bet you there are a lot of people who are discharged on about 5 or 7 bars, only one of which was pardoned.
Well, that's not exactly right. The individuals, when they're discharged, there's a reason they're discharged. So a general court-martial or a special court-martial, even without a court-martial, there's a reason for their discharge, and it's the last thing they did. They don't say, usually, it's all these things that you've done throughout, we're going to look at all of that. It's the last period of AWOL. It's for that last period of AWOL that you're getting your discharge. And he's saying you can't look at that last period of AWOL because that's what's been pardoned. But if that were correct, it's correct for everybody in this program.
That last statement that it's correct for everybody in the program isn't logical.
The program is only for military deserters and draft evaders. So all of those military deserters who are seeking clemency and a pardon in the first place, those individuals are...
He's not a deserter. He was not characterized as a deserter. He was different.
Well, he was administratively characterized as a deserter.
If you look at the regulations under which his discharge occurred, it was other than deserter.
Under the Code of Military Justice, he's not classified as a deserter.
Okay.
Under administrative view of what is a deserter, he was a deserter and classified as that. It doesn't ultimately matter for this case whether we decide whether the Congress meant when they said a statutory bar on desertion, whether they meant one of those or the other. It doesn't matter. There is a statutory bar for desertion. But we don't even need to look to that statutory bar because there are two others that could apply in his case.
But the discharge wasn't for desertion. I guess I don't understand this. You can say that you can go in and recharacterize the discharge?
Not at all. Not at all. The discharge was for his being AWOL.
Right.
Right. And he got a sentence from a general court-martial that said, because you were AWOL, we're discharging you from the Army. At the most extreme, his argument is that he's back in the Army now because we undo the entirety of that general court-martial. That can't be correct. So the court-martial had effect. And Congress said...
No, he couldn't be back in the Army because he has a clemency discharge. He's been discharged.
He's been discharged, yes. So he received this clemency discharge. And that discharge replaces the bad conduct discharge that he had, but the intent of the president clearly wasn't to alter the balance of veterans' benefits. It wasn't for that purpose. Both the clemency discharge and the pardon, which should be considered together.
There's a real tension here, I think, between the purpose of the program and the like, where it very specifically states this isn't supposed to give them veterans' benefits, and the pardon itself and the law following pardons, which says... Once you get a pardon, you can't consider, the conduct to deny various rights.
There's some tension, absolutely, in how to effectuate what the president was trying to do. How do we look at what the president's clear intent was and what the...
You keep saying the president's clear intent, but I'm not sure it's all that clear. It's... The program itself operated in certain ways, but the proclamation he sent out wasn't clear about the effect of these pardons. Is there something more specific you can point us to?
A couple of things. After the proclamation, there was a Federal Register notice that the Presidential Clemency Board put together, and we cite this in our brief. It's at 40 Fed Reg 56. It says, a clemency discharge neither entitles its recipient to veterans benefits nor bars his receiving those benefits to which he's otherwise entitled. The Veterans Administration and other agencies may extend veterans benefits to some holders of a clemency discharge, but it is contemplated that most will not receive veterans benefits. And as we explained in our brief,
Here's my point. That's all talking about the clemency discharge.
Yes.
And I see that the clemency discharge alone doesn't get you there. But once he got the full pardon, why doesn't that prevent the VA? It seems to me that that's the argument your friend is making, is that there has to be a distinction between the clemency discharge and the pardon itself. And when it says full pardon and you've gone through the community service and things like that, that wipes out all the effects of the bad act. And why doesn't it wipe it out for benefits as well as everything else I think you'd concede it wipes it out for?
I would direct the court's attention to the Presidential Clemency Board report to the president, where the board specifically explained that every military absent offender who had gotten a bad conduct discharge gets both a clemency discharge now and a full pardon. So this wasn't just a one-time thing for him, in answer to your earlier question. Everybody gets it, and that's at page 11 of the report. So the two aren't separable. It's not like he got a clemency and then later the president said, well, you did such a good job, we're going to give you a pardon too. Everybody gets both. And the two were...
So your argument has to be that we need to read the word full not to be full. Right? I mean, we would have to conclude that it was not an actual full pardon. Because the president can't give a full pardon and then later say, oops, I didn't mean it. I'm taking it back, right?
I don't know whether the president can do that or not. We certainly don't have to reach that question here. The president here said at the front end that I'm giving you a pardon pursuant to the clemency program.
But the use of the use of the word full is not really conveying a full pardon.
It doesn't have magical effect that the use of the phrase full pardon doesn't automatically mean that the court needs to adopt all of the case law about what a pardon does forever. We also explained in our brief that we don't think, even if that were the case,
that would
be a pardon.
What is the case law, by the way? Carlesi seemed to indicate that a pardon notwithstanding, you still looked at the underlying conduct to see if it was a second offense.
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor.
And so what is the real effect of full pardon? It's really in the context that it's given, right?
It is in the context it's given because the underlying conduct still matters. A full pardon, it always restores the right of citizenship. And it's important to look at this whole program in its context. What the president was doing was addressing military deserters and Vietnam-era draft evaders, many of whom were overseas. And the idea was to bring them back into society, to let them be citizens again, to let them vote, serve on juries, and do all the other things that a citizen gets. But the president said, this isn't entitled to give you veterans benefits. Some people were saying that it should have been, that's what they wanted the president to do, but this was a compromise position. He said, I'm going to bring you back as citizens, but I'm not giving you veterans benefits. That was more clear in the Presidential Clemency Board report to the president, where they say...
In the pardon itself, in this case, how do we bring all that in? Is it just the in furtherance of language? Because I think there really is some... Again, there's tension between the language full pardon, which I plainly means full pardon, and the rest of it.
It's the in furtherance of, Your Honor. That's not like something...
So, if we didn't have that in furtherance language, if it just said... You've completed this program, and therefore I give you a full pardon. Would the argument change? Then we would have to look at what full pardon means in the context of this, and
yes,
whether it does wipe out the misconduct.
Then the court would look at what full pardon means, and I direct the court's attention to N. Ray North out of the D.C. Circuit, where they looked at statutory language that said, if you've been indicted, you're not eligible for attorney's fees. Somebody was indicted. And then somebody got a pardon for that indictment. And the D.C. Circuit said, despite the pardon, you still don't get the attorney's fees because that statutory bar, because you were indicted, is still in place. And the president can't undo that statutory bar. That's not what a pardon is. The same analysis would apply here. The statutory bars are still in place.
Well,
and the way to get around
that argument seems to go a little too far, though. I mean, you're not suggesting that the president couldn't issue a full pardon that wiped out this misconduct and would have restored veterans' benefits, right?
The
clearly,
president
the
can't...
The president can override about anything he wants with a pardon, can't he?
No, he can't undo statute. What the president can do is make it so that the executive can't punish you for that offense. And the president, through the board...
So if the president, in this full pardon, had said, I pardon you, you've completed this... The executive branch can no longer consider your AWOL offense in any way whatsoever.
Then
they couldn't have considered it.
Then there would
just benefits.
There would just be a minor administrative hurdle for him. He would go to the Board of Correction of Military Records, and the board would say.
The problem I'm having with your argument, you seem to suggest that the only way he could have gotten benefits is if a correction board upgrades it. But if a president issues a very broad pardon and says, you know, you fulfilled everything I wanted you to do, everything's wiped out. The executive branch, including the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, will no longer consider your AWOL offense for which you were court-martialed in determining whether you're entitled to benefits. Clearly, the president can direct the executive branch not to do that.
That would be a very difficult case. Congress didn't think in 1977 when... They reaffirmed that they thought these statutory bars applied even to these individuals. These individuals who had all gotten pardons. All of these people had been pardoned, and Congress said, we still think the statutory bars apply.
Where did they say that?
In 1977, H.R. Report 95-580. They said the correct interpretation of the law, a reasonable interpretation of the law, would indicate that so long as the reasons for discharge or release remain, the individual will be barred from receiving veterans' benefits under Section 3103A. That's the statutory bars. They say only in instances when the Board of Correction of Military Records changes the reasons for discharge should the bar be waived or removed. So Congress clearly thought, and this is after the decision at issue here. But Congress went in and their interpretation is the same as ours.
But do we care? I mean, I understand the hypothetical pardon I'm talking about is not the one Mr. Robertson got. But if we have this broad hypothetical pardon, do we really care what Congress thought? I mean, that's what I'm trying to press. the executive branch or the president has very broad pardon authority. So if he wants to say these statutory bars no longer apply in this specific to this specific individual, I'm pardoning him for everything. Can't he do that?
That would be exactly contrary to what the D.C. Circuit held in In re Norte. If the president were to say, I'm undoing these statutory bars, let's say it were more specific. He said, in this individual case, I think he's entitled to veterans benefits. I want you to pay him veterans benefits.
And what's your basis for saying the president can't do that?
Because Congress controls the purse. Congress controls...
It's unconstitutional if the president does
that. Yes. So Congress has its place and the executive has this. And Congress has said... to be a veteran, you have to serve in conditions other than dishonorable, and what that means is to look at these statutory bars, and there are regulatory bars on top of it, to make a character of discharge determination. And if you don't have any of those bars that apply to you, you are automatically entitled to veterans benefits. You become eligible at that point. That's all it takes. Mr. Robertson's argument is the pardon automatically does that. And if it did it in his case, it did it in everybody's case. And that's clearly in conflict with the intention of the program in the first place. And that's our primary point, that this court need not address that more difficult constitutional question that Judge Hughes raises about what happens when Congress explicitly says, I want this person to have veterans benefits. And I'm sorry, when the president explicitly says that and Congress says, no, there's a statutory bar to benefits. We don't have to reach that here, and of course the court shouldn't reach that under constitutional avoidance doctrine because this clemency program is not the general pardon authority. This is a pardon pursuant to this particular program where the president and those who effectuated his intent said, that's not what we're trying to do. They thought most people wouldn't get veterans benefits. There are a few. There are 80, in fact, particularly meritorious individuals, they said, we're going to upgrade them immediately, and that immediate upgrade is going to result in veterans benefits. Everybody else they didn't think would get that.
Had anybody else other than those 80 ever gotten veterans benefits?
I don't know the answer to that question. There were a number of individuals who went to discharge review boards and had their discharge upgraded. And then, actually, I know the answer is yes, because then Congress went in 1977 and said they were using too lax of standards. We want to use the same standards as historically, and about half of those ended up not getting the upgrade because of the Congress's retroactive putting in of the higher standards. The other half did.
Anybody that got benefits without going to a corrections board? I saw some reference into the record that even if there was an automatic upgrade, what this clemency discharge could do would be if somebody had served a period of service prior to the one that they were court-martialed for and been discharged honorably, they could get a connection for that.
Yes.
Without going to correct.
Yes. So normally if you serve multiple times and the last one, your actual discharge was for conditions other than honorable, then even though you had previously earned veterans benefits, you lost those. Under the clemency program, you don't lose those anymore. So those people, and there were some of those, they did get the veterans benefits.
Thank you, Mr. Goodman.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Mammon, we restored your rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You may proceed.
Your Honor, if I may start with the question involving whether Congress or whether the President can undo the statutory bar. And our friend on the other side mentioned that Congress had said that no, these pardons or the clemency discharges weren't meant to undo the statutory bar and that the President couldn't do that. Your Honor, the argument that the President can't undo a statutory bar is contrary to a whole line of Supreme Court cases. In fact, all the cases that are cited about the authority of the President. We distinguish the cases such as In re Norte, and I'll speak about that in a minute. But it goes to the heart of the pardon that the President can undo penalties and disabilities imposed by law. That goes to what happened in Garland, the very first case, seminal case that we discussed in our briefs, talking about the fact that this attorney was barred from practicing in front of the Supreme Court unless he took the oath. That was a statute that Congress passed. The Supreme Court said Congress does not have the authority to restrict the presidential pardon and cannot put anything beyond the reach of the pardon. So I think that goes to the heart of the pardon power, that the President has the authority to remove those statutory bars. In regards to the NRA North decision, the issue there actually was undoing the facts of the past, like changing what had happened such that no longer had he been indicted, so he was entitled to money. We're not challenging the fact, and we're not arguing that Mr. Robinson never went AWOL. He certainly did. It's not the question of changing what happened in 1966. It's whether in 1977 the VA can continue to apply the statutory bar to him to bar him from benefits. So I think North is not on the same line as what we're talking about here, is whether the VA can continue to bar someone from receiving benefits. There was a question asked about... let me first address the fact that whether the pardons apply to everyone. And we don't know that, unfortunately, the history of this program, but even if the pardons did apply to everyone broadly, that's very consistent with our history, going back again to the Civil War, post-Civil War cases. There was blanket pardons issued by President Lincoln and President Johnson, and our most
But it's
powerful,
not very consistent with a lot of history, both congressional hearings, reports from the board, which recognize that there was a lot of tension over this pardon program, and that that was a compromise, and it wasn't intended to be a blanket pardon of everybody. Those, I understand in the Civil War and those other things, there were much broader proclamations, but this was a very, very difficult time and a very difficult issue, and there was debate. And so I don't think that you have a very strong argument that this was intended to be a blanket pardon, and that just by the fact of going through this, they get a full pardon. That's where I'm having trouble, is that it's in a specific time and place.
Well, Your Honor, there was controversy here, we know from the history, but there was also very much controversy in the Civil War as well, and that's the reason why we had all these laws that Congress passed saying this person will not be entitled to practice before the Supreme Court. All the Noe, Klein, Osborne cases, Paddleford, talking about the fact that the individual cannot seek reimbursement for monies that was seized or property that was seized. That was obviously a very controversial time as well, and the Supreme Court constantly said this pardon is a meaningful, powerful tool that must be given full effect. As far as the particular circumstances, I think, Your Honor, we have to go back to the language of the pardon itself and the fact that it uses the words full pardon. And only President Ford could have in his own power, it was a power to him, he could have restricted that. He could have set further clarifications of further limitations. We submit that those aren't in the pardon itself and that the pardon must be read as it says, that it's a full pardon, all the conditions for it have been fulfilled.
Thank you, Mr. Mammon. Our next case is